Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Now, May is Celiac Awareness Month, highlighting a condition that affects one in 100 people, many undiagnosed, which is a hugely important element of this discussion. Joining us today is registered dietitian Sarah Keogh to answer key questions and help us better understand this often misunderstood condition. Good afternoon to you, Sarah.
Good afternoon, Anna.
Hi. Now, listen, Sarah, there's a huge list of symptoms here because there's quite a lot of people, I assume, who may have it who don't actually realise. Would that be fair?
Very true. We know that at least 75% of people with celiac disease actually don't know that that's what's wrong with them.
Wow. OK. Will you talk us through, because I've two pages of symptoms here, so maybe give us the most obvious and then we'll go into the testing bit.
No worries. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disease that primarily affects the gut. And if you have celiac disease, you can have anything from sort of diarrhea, constipation, bloating, stomach pain. And the symptoms can be quite mild to quite severe. And in fact, often people have quite mild symptoms for years. They think they've a touch of irritable bowel or a bit of lactose intolerance or something like that. But other symptoms can turn up. So it can affect your nervous system. So a lot of people with celiac disease will get migraine. They will get brain fog. They will feel very tired. They might get pins and needles. We have people who have the nerve damage with it, maybe lost the ability to walk temporarily until they went on the gluten-free diet. Then you can have skin. There's a very common skin rash, which is a really itchy, blistery skin rash that often turns up on the outside of both elbows or the outside of both knees. And it can affect your teeth and mouth ulcers. So there's just loads of places that you can turn up.
Okay, because I would have associated with you know, abdominal pain, bloating, gas, flatulence, constipation, but all of those obvious tummy things. But there's so many others.
There is. And actually, about 40% of celiacs get little to no tummy effects either. So sometimes the reason people aren't diagnosed is they're having maybe lots of low iron, they're feeling really tired, they're getting all these headaches, they're getting this rash, but the tummy is fine. So no one is thinking celiac. So I'd say to you, don't always wait for tummy symptoms before you might check celiac disease, especially if you have any other autoimmune conditions.
Okay, of course. And would the symptoms be the same in children, Sarah?
Pretty similar. So you'll get a lot of kids will get the tummy issues. You might see a bit more weight loss with children, but not as common as it would have been years ago. But very similar symptoms, tired, run down, low iron. But what we also see in kids is they often stop getting taller. So looking at them, they look like their weight is okay because they don't look thin. But when you compare them, say, to the height they should be for their age, they're usually a bit shorter than they should be. And tiredness is the main thing we see for kids, and a little bit of tummy pain. And what we do find often is we've kids who've had maybe tummy pain for a year or two and it's been put down to anxiety or things like that. And no one has thought to check, just rule out celiac disease in these kids.
OK, so if that sounds familiar for a parent or for someone themselves, they go to their GP. What's the next step then in terms of testing, Sarah?
So the most important thing is to keep eating gluten. You know, at the Celiac Society, the big mistake we see people making is going, oh, sure, I'll cut out the gluten and see how I feel. Don't do that. If you do that, when you get tested, your test is going to come back negative, even if you are celiac. So you have to be eating gluten for at least 6 weeks before you're tested. So don't do anything except book in with your GP. Your GP can do a blood test. In children, if the blood test is very high, that will diagnose it straight away. In adults, if the blood test is high, you'll then go and have a painless biopsy done just to check the gut. And, you know, it's so important to actually get this checking. Like with the Celiac Society, we're doing Celiac Awareness Month and we've loads of events running over the month. And, you know, there's loads of information on celiac.ie. But I think it's that idea of getting tested. Don't just cut out the gluten. You know, really make sure that you go through the full process with it.
So eat normally before
eat normally.
That test happens in order for the GP to get a proper picture.
And that's it. Or if you've given up gluten already, which lots of people do because they know they feel better. But it's actually very important to get properly tested and diagnosed because people with celiac disease are more likely to get things like infertility. They're more likely to get osteoporosis. There's a whole sweep of other problems with it. So you need to see a dietitian for a very, very strict gluten-free diet. So it's not just a cut-out bread. So it's really important to get your proper testing and get your proper follow-up treatment and all the rest down through the years.
And Sarah, if it's not treated, if you just continue, you know, getting on with life, is there fallout from that in terms of your long-term health?
There is. So what we do know is that untreated celiacs, it looks like they have a shorter lifespan overall. We see much earlier and more severe osteoporosis, which is a huge issue with that. So that's one of the big, big side effects with it. There's a type of bowel cancer as well that's more common in untreated celiacs. And usually people are diagnosed with this maybe in their late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, when the doctors see it, they recognize it as this particular type of cancer. And they'll often then diagnose someone at that stage with it. So, you know, we really want people to get picked up. And what we often find as well is like this runs in families. So sometimes family members would say, well, I'm not having any symptoms, don't want to get tested. But when they do and they get treated, they're like, wow, I didn't realize how bad I was feeling.
Until now. Life changing.
Yeah, hugely, hugely. Wow. We see even kids like jump grades in school and everything, you know. Even if they're not very sick, it just pulls your energy levels down, pulls down your, you're just not absorbing your nutrition. So, you know, nothing is going to work 100% the way that we want it to.
Of course. Okay. So when you are on that gluten-free diet, Sarah, mm-hmm. what foods and ingredients should be strictly avoided then?
So gluten is going to be found in wheat, rye and barley. And it is in oats themselves don't have any gluten, but they get hugely contaminated with gluten during kind of processing and stuff like that. So people with celiac disease need to go for gluten-free oats. Now, some celiacs can't tolerate oats either. The thing about it is the obvious one is bread, biscuits, things like that. You know, okay. Everyone kind of goes, oh, yeah, the sweet and that. The tricky bit is the packaged foods where there might just be a tiny bit. Or there was a bit of flour on the line in the factory that the food was made in. So you're checking stock cubes, tomato ketchup, gravy, soy sauce, you're checking grated cheese, you're checking absolutely everything. And the Celiac Society do a food list every year of foods that are guaranteed gluten-free. The other problem, though, is that if you have a gluten-free sandwich and it touches an ordinary sandwich, it's not gluten-free anymore.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So this cross-contamination is going to be an issue, isn't it? Particularly if you're eating out.
Huge issue, even at home. Like people need to have a separate toaster. They need to have their own jam and butter. You know, you make toast, you end up, but you know, you leave crumbs in the butter when you make toast.
Yes.
So one crumb has 100 times the amount of gluten needed to trigger damage to the gut in someone with celiac disease.
Wow.
So it's absolutely separate. It has to. And that's actually the really tricky part. As you said, when you're eating out, you know, some restaurants are absolutely fantastic and they have a separate toaster and they have a separate deep fat fryer and they can do all of that. Not all restaurants are able to do it to that level. So, you know, and not everybody understands. A lot of people, we do training for chefs and, you know, it's so interesting to do it because a lot of them are like, I had no idea it needed to be that strict, you know. So it's trying to get across that people really do need to be 100% gluten-free when they're celiac.
Okay, it needs to be taken seriously. And there's an educational piece around that in terms of the hospitality industry, probably. Let me just tell you what texts are coming in. There's kind of a theme already here, Sarah. My son was diagnosed at 13 and the red flag was he was anemic and his growth was stunted. So exactly what you had said about the growth. FYI, not all GPs do that blood test. My eldest, who's 9, is a celiac and we recently got our 4-year-old tested but had to be referred from the GP to get that done in a hospital.
Yeah, so children's blood tests are the GP. Very few GPs actually do children's blood tests with the GP. So they'll send them into your local children's hospital to do it. So, but for adults, but you'll still need to go through your GP just to get your referral.
You need to start there and
start with the GP. Yeah.
Okay. How often should someone be tested for celiac disease? Is there follow-ups or monitoring of some kind?
Well, it's like any chronic condition. You need to have follow-up. So once a year, you need to get your bloods done and we need to check things like iron and vitamin B12. We need to check folate, thyroid. And you've got to remember, if it's in your family, you need to get checked. If you have underactive thyroid, you're more likely to have celiac disease.
Really? They're linked, are they?
They're linked. So the celiac disease is genetic. So about a third of the population carry the genes for celiac disease and then it needs a trigger. But the genes for celiac for type 1 diabetes and for underactive thyroid are the same one. So once you have one, you're a little more likely to get the other. And it's actually like celiac disease is so common now that in Italy, they're actually at the moment screening every single school child for celiac disease.
It's funny, I was going to say, is there or could there be a process where children are just tested and we just know in the future?
Well, this is what we want. I mean, the Celiac Society, like we really would love to see screening done because Italy is the first country to actually step up and do it. Mm. And they did it on foot of having done a pilot scheme on this and finding loads of children who were celiac and they didn't know. And these kids, you know, they don't do as well at school. They're not growing properly. We know they have problems around puberty. We know we see fertility issues with undiagnosed celiac, like repeated miscarriage, more difficulty becoming pregnant. Like it can have very serious issues. And we often, the savings from a health point of view, if you catch it early, are just enormous, you know?
Yeah, that's a really smart thing of life, to, you know, to replicate.
Yeah, yeah.
Can children outgrow celiac disease?
No. So this is one of the problems is there's a lot of myths about celiac disease. Okay. And 1 year ago, they did think that children grew out of it, but we now know that doesn't happen. So if you're an older person right now and you were celiac as a kid and you think you're not anymore, you are, even if you're feeling okay. So just to watch it. So we definitely don't outgrow it. And it can turn up at any age. Do you know what I mean? We get people diagnosed in their 50s, 60s, 80s even. You can be diagnosed at any age with it. So it's not a childhood disease. It can just be across the board. The most common age to be diagnosed at the moment is between 40 and 60.
Oh, OK. That's very interesting. So as a woman in her 40s, I'm thinking if I don't have it now, I won't have it. But you can develop it at any stage.
Any age. Yeah. Okay. Especially if it's in your family. So if you even have cousins, aunts, that kind of thing with it, chances are it's in your family. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. But, you know, if you're having any sort of those symptoms, and someone in your family celiac, you know, to be honest, it's recommended that any of your first degree relatives are celiac, you need to be tested. So if your children, sisters, brothers, parents are celiac, you need to be tested.
Okay. My husband was severe celiac, and he developed esophageal cancer that we were told was probably as a result of his celiac disease. He passed away last October at age 57. Oh, I'm so sorry to read that. There's no name on the text, but that's devastating.
It is. It's awful. But I would say we don't see a link between celiac and esophageal cancer. It's okay. a particular bowel cancer we generally see. Now, I don't know that person's medical case, so I don't know. But, you know, that's very sad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sarah, if anyone's listening and they need more information, where's the best place to go?
So celiac.ie is our website, or you can follow us on Instagram at Celiac Ireland. And we have loads of events. We have webinars and lunchtime on a couple of the Wednesdays. We have an event out in Dunstores and Cornell's Court in a few weeks. So if anybody wants to come along and ask any questions of that, they're absolutely more than welcome. But get in touch with us. You can also email us at info@celiac.ie. And if you have any questions about celiac disease, let us know.
Brilliant. That's Sarah Keogh, dietitian and founder of Eat Well. Brilliant information there, Sarah. And thank you for joining us.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.